And while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the Radio News Analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
A very good afternoon to you, Namibia and the world. Thank you for choosing Eagle FM. I'm your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and you are now tuned to Into On The Reading News Analysis, your trusted space for informed updates, critical insights, and unpacked developments from across Namibia's economic, social, and governance landscape. Now, if you've been looking for a show that breaks down the big issues from governance to grassroots, from policy to the people, then look no further. On The Reading News Analysis is your weekday guide to what matters most, bringing you the headlines behind the headlines every Monday to Friday from 1300 hours to 1430. Now, this isn't just about headlines on The Reading News Analysis. It's about depth and dialogue. It is where we interrogate the stories shaping our country, asking the hard questions, revisiting past coverage, and connecting the dots through archived audio, expert opinions, and sharp analysis. From major policy decisions to everyday realities, we bring you the full story with context and clarity. Our interviews are long form and in-depth because some stories deserve more than just sound bites. We come prepared with facts, background, and your questions to make sure every conversation brings us closer to understanding what truly lies beneath the surface. Remember, you can catch us on the Radar Live, on all Eagle FM frequencies, via the Eagle FM app and our interactive Eagle FM website. Don't forget to subscribe to our WhatsApp channel for real-time updates, exclusive interview clips, and behind-the-scenes moments. So stay tuned, stay curious, and stay beyond the surface. This is On The Reading News Analysis, when Namibia comes to think. Now let's jump straight into what's on the agenda for today. Namibia, like many African nations, relies heavily on imported medicines, mainly from South Africa, India, and Europe. The Ministry of Health and Social Services spends billions of Namibian dollars annually procuring essential drugs, vaccines, and medical supplies from abroad. Now, while this ensures availability, it also exposes the health sector to global supply chain disruptions, foreign exchange pressures, and policy fluctuations, as seen during the COVID-19 pandemic. Now, meanwhile, Zambia recently announced a partnership with India to locally produce up to 750 pharmaceutical products, marking a major step toward medicine security and industrial growth. The partnership aims to create jobs, strengthen regional trade in the SADC bloc, and reduce reliance on imports. Namibia does have some pharmaceutical distributors and compounding pharmacies, but no large-scale manufacturing industry. So today we want to find out, can Namibia produce its own pharmaceuticals? And of course, I'm joined in studio by Malima Kapirika, who is the pharmacy manager and pharmacy board of Namibia. A very good afternoon to you and welcome to On The Reading News Analysis.
Thank you, Ndafa.
Okay. Other than that, I'm also joined in studio by Dr. Bonnie Singu. He is the president of the Pharmacy Council and associate dean at the University of Namibia School of Pharmacy. A very good afternoon, Doc. Welcome to On The Reading News Analysis.
Good afternoon, Dafa. Thank you very much. May I just correct the captions there on our thing? So
sure.
Malima Kapirika truly is the manager of the Pharmacy Board of Namibia under the Health Professions Council.
Okay.
And I am the chairperson of the Pharmacy Board of Namibia, not the Pharmacy Council, because legislation has changed since 2024.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think I should blame the Ministry of Health for that. I copied it from them. But nonetheless, thank you so much, Doc, for correcting that.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a pleasure to have you. And it's a pleasure to have the right people in studio with me today.
Yeah,
of course, today we're talking about, can Namibia, does Namibia have the potential? I think that's the first question I want to go with. Dr. Singu, let me start with you. Does Namibia have the potential to produce its own drugs, its own pharmaceuticals, its own medicine?
Thank you very much, Ndafa. This is a pertinent question. To answer that question on potential, you actually have to look at what constitutes the potential for us to manufacture. And to my mind, potential would include human resources. Very important. Do we have the people? And secondly, financial resources.
Yeah.
And also thirdly, I would say, is the will. So looking at all these things, looking at the industry, we feel human resources, currently we are getting there. Financial resources, I believe if we are resourceful enough, we have the financial resources. And the will is there.
Okay.
Definitely. So we do have potential.
Okay. Now, Dr. Caprica, I called you doctor, but pharmacy Caprica, should I put it like that? Is that okay? Okay, cool. Getting to the nitty-gritties of a drug, of producing a drug, producing a medicine. Use any example, whether it's paracetamol, Panadol, whatsoever. Just what are the basics of, can I just take water and maybe make a drug out of it? Just what are those basic terminologies or basic terms of producing a drug?
Yeah, thank you very much, Ndafa. So for when we look at medicines, I think the example you give of Panadol and paracetamol, I think that is a very good one to help illustrate how this works. So Panadol, for example, is a proprietary product. It's made by one particular company. But that is a finished product. And then paracetamol is actually the medicine in that tablet that cures your headache and so forth. So in producing medicines, you could compartmentalize it into sort of two buckets. So there's the first component, which is what you might term upstream or the first bits.
Yeah.
So we need to actually make that item, the paracetamol, the actual active entity that is actually treating the headache or taking the pain away. So that is the first major step. Of course, then after that, we have to move on to actually producing the tablet itself. So when you have your paracetamol, we have to mix it with other things for us to produce the actual tablet that we are able to take. And that combining of these different raw materials, that is what we tend to think of as pharmaceutical manufacturing. But it should really, in context, be thought of through that whole, that entire value chain, that you have to actually produce these raw materials themselves and then put them together using the expertise that is required for you to have the final product, which would be a tablet or a capsule or a syrup.
Which Dr. Sigurd spoke about human resources. Which particular people are needed in producing a drug? I can only think of pharmacists, but who are those people, as you speak about experts as well, who are those people and what are their names or what are their titles that can actually make a drug?
So there are different types of medicines, as you might be aware. You have your tablet, you get injections, you know, different injections even at that, things like insulin and so forth. So there's a wide range of professionals that are quite critical in actually producing that final product. Usually in the background, you would not normally even know they are there. So we are talking about process engineers. We are talking about various disciplines of biologists, from the mechanical part of it for your equipment and all that. We need to look at for new therapies. We do have synthetic biology that, for example, comes in. So where we have to look at different microbes that we use to produce these active ingredients. So you would look at biologists that would do that. You would look at your various things like microbiologists and chemists themselves in purifying these sort of compounds. And various disciplines of engineering that are involved in actually producing that final product.
On that, Dr. Singh?
Thank you so much. Mr. Caprica has put it well. I just want to add some icing on that cake. To say that when you have a pharmaceutical manufacturing plant, there are different aspects of it. You have the operations and then the quality control. So in the operations, of course, it's simply making sure that the product is going from the raw materials, more raw materials are being put together, mixed, and then granulating them, drying them, compressing them to form that tablet, then packaging them, and so on. So there you just need laymen. And this is where our country can win big, because it could be a source of employment for so many people when you're manufacturing industry.
Okay.
So lay people can just be doing that kind of work. And then you have, of course, quality assurance.
Yeah.
So quality assurance makes sure that this medicine you are producing is of good quality, it will work, and it will not cause harm to the users. So there you have to make sure that you test the product. You test that it can really stay for 2 years on the shelf without breaking down. It will not turn into harmful, toxic substances after 3 to 4 years. So you have to test it in the labs. So there you will have pharmacists there, biochemists there, microbiologists there, and all kinds of people. And then you have to, as he said, have people who can maintain the equipment. Those machines that are tumbling and mixing things and heating and everything, you have to have engineers and technicians on site as well.
Yeah.
But then above it all, you also need to have competent managers, competent people who can run the plant and run the stock, order things, make sure that people are being paid properly, make sure that the financing is right, making sure that the customer is being provided what they ordered, so that it's a, you know, it's a business. It's not something that is free. So it has so many components to it. And that is where we ask the question, do we have the potential? And human resource is really important, because if you don't have enough people with experience in running a pharmaceutical industry, it will be a problem. And that is where we feel that with the School of Pharmacy at UNAM, that we are training competent quality pharmacists.
Okay.
And we have enough people who know and understand what goes into manufacturing a drug. So just to add on, who is involved?
Okay. That's interesting. So, but looking at things now, we do have pharmacists. We do have microbiologists. Are they also necessary in this aspect? Okay, we do have chemists. We do have those that are studying something laboratory at other universities. Don't you think we do have the capacity, we do have the human resource that is needed? Maybe that factor is kind of like sort of be established in it, if it's for layman people to do what they expect, says, and lays out in the ground. I think that we have enough of it. Do you think, for you, looking at this picture, do you think in terms of human resources we might actually have them?
There's no doubt about it. We have the people. We just need to have a kind of a vision of what we want to do and put these components together. It doesn't require complicated issues actually to set up a manufacturing plant. It does not. All it requires, like I said, are the human resources, the capital, and the will.
Okay, interesting. Now, coming back to you, Dr. Caprica. Oh, my word. you need to get used to that.
Let's just continue with that, Dr.
I don't know, maybe he's pursuing his PhD.
No, let me tell you something about this guy. He is one of the brightest people we've graduated from the UNAM School of Pharmacy. Yes. So when you call him doctor, is in.
I'm not making a mistake.
No, you're not. It's a very, very bright guy.
Good. Wonderful. Yeah. Doctor, coming back to you now. In terms of course, let's say somebody has the will now and the vision and wants to run with it. They hear the story on Eagle FM and they were like, yeah, hold on, I can make money out of this. What are the procedures that they need to undergo in order to be able to do this? And they know a couple of pharmacies, they know some microbiologists, they know Dr. Singh over there, they can just pull him on board to be able to run with the story. What are those procedures in place that they have to follow?
Yeah, so for manufacturing, of course, this is pharmaceuticals manufacturing, so this concerns the health of people.
Yeah, but so, forgive me.
Yeah.
There is a scheduled commercial break coming up.
Sure.
So sorry, we'll continue right after.
No problem.
Okay, stay tuned. This is On the Reading News Analysis.
Great news! Imbert just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of IMBA? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything IMBA has to offer at an unbeatable price. IMBA, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
And we are back. This is On The Radar News Analysis. Today we are discussing if Namibia has the potential and is able to produce its own drugs. And by drugs, I mean those, not those other drugs, but the right ones. Okay. Yeah. The good ones. Yeah. Okay. So we'll back to you, Mr. Caprica. What is it that is needed, or what procedures, should be in place, at least the basics, should we want to set up our own pharmaceutical industry right here in Namibia?
So the main one is compliance,
okay,
of course, because we want to make sure that whatever is produced is mm-hmm. safe, yeah, is of good quality. So for that, we need some regulatory compliance.
Okay.
And we do have a body in place that that handles the issues around the standards of practice, essentially.
Mm-hmm. What is that body for somebody who's hearing this for the first time?
That would be the Namibia Medicines Regulatory Council,
okay,
or NMRC for okay. short. So they should be your first stop.
Okay.
You go there, you have a chat, they will give you access to documentation as to what they require mm-hmm. from you as a, mm-hmm. as a manufacturer. Of course, in setting that up, as you are gearing to be able to produce this to produce medicines,
mm-hmm.
that compliance part is important, of course, and so then that forces upon this this enterprising individual,
yeah,
to have to consult quite wildly.
Mm-hmm.
You have to talk to pharmacists.
Yeah.
You have to speak with various types of engineers, because you would think in terms of the physical infrastructure that you have to set up. You have to think in terms of the regulatory requirements, but more importantly, really, you have to also mm-hmm. think in terms of the priorities, in terms of the health needs of okay. of the country.
Okay.
And we do have wonderful documents that can guide you. We have the Namibia Essential Medicines mm-hmm. List,
okay,
which is a list of medicines that the ministry says, based on Namibia's public health circumstances,
mm-hmm.
these medicines are very important. Okay. So you sort of already know, if you are going to get into this, I should probably focus on this
yeah.
if I'm going to have some impact. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Now, Dr. Singu, I must appreciate you. While I was busy running my mind on this beautiful conversation, just then to find out that you had a very wonderful conversation with somebody from the U.S. In terms of, and you went beyond Namibia, talking about Africa. Now, with that being said, Zambia is set to produce about 750 medicines locally, and it's partnering up with India. Could Namibia perhaps go in the same line by partnering up with India? We do know that India produces lots of medication, right? And Namibia also imports from there. Am I correct?
Mm.
Okay. So, yeah, get into that for us. Could we perhaps benefit from something like this, like that of Zambia?
Yeah, thank you very much for this question. Although I'm not sure what is the nature of the agreement between our neighbors yeah. And India.
Mm-hmm.
However, I could already imagine that it has to do with capacity. So the challenge, as you would see from my interview
mm-hmm.
With Angela from the US, who is a biopharma expert who visited us, and we had a talk about these things.
Okay.
Yeah. The challenge we have in Africa is really resources.
Mm.
But sometimes when you say Africa, it's not fair, because there are some countries in Africa who can actually do it, who have the will.
Mm.
I keep on emphasizing on the will.
On the will
is really important. Yeah. So it depends on case by case, you know. I would think it has to do with capacity, perhaps. Mm-hmm. They are bringing in maybe people to help them run the industry, mm-hmm. because, like I said, it requires some experience to run these industries. You can't just start today because you were working at one parastatal in Namibia, then you can run a pharmaceutical industry as well. No, you have to have the right experience. Okay. So that is probably why they are bringing them in.
Mm.
But like I said, as Namibia, we are more than ready.
Mm-hmm.
We are capable. We have the potential.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need to go far. We have FabuFarm in Namibia,
exactly.
which has been operating for over 20, 30 years now in this country,
mm-hmm.
in this environment, because mm-hmm. they've played it smart. One, they knew exactly what the market needed.
Mm.
They produced within their limits. They were not comparing themselves with big pharma companies in South Africa or India
yeah.
or China or the US.
Yeah.
They simply set up shop and said, okay, what does our Namibian market need? What can we easily manufacture that is cost effective
mm-hmm.
and will still make a difference?
Mm-hmm.
So if we go that way, we may not actually need India or China mm-hmm. or the US to help us okay. set this up. We do not need. All we need are human resources,
yes,
capital made available, and the will to do it.
Yeah.
That's
you
all.
Know where there's a will, there's a way.
Yes.
We will find a way
yes.
somewhere. Mm. Now, talking about FabuFarm, and this has been really on the shelves for the longest time ever. Almost every mom will tell you that the nurse told me to apply FabuFarm. It's the best for the baby. yeah. So coming back to you now, Mr. Caprica, in terms of FabuFarm, for instance, we could do something similar. And I feel like from me, a layperson who doesn't really know much about pharmacists or what goes into it and the pharmacological aspects of many drugs or any drug for that matter. Talking about FabuFarm now, I'm seeing it as a chemical that goes into it, and comparing it to maybe a capsule such as, go with the very first example of Panado. Isn't that something that we can really do, like really concretely do? I mean, it can be, and Dr. Singh, this question's for you right after.
Yeah.
This is something that even 5-6 pharmacy students can be able to just play around with. Isn't that so?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So just to mention how sort of integral FabuFarm has been to Namibian society for the period that they have been operational.
Yeah.
So you find a certain very popular product that they tend to refer to as FabuFarm. We call it Aqueous Cream.
Oh,
yes.
Aqueous Cream.
Yes.
Yes.
So it's one of those products that, sure, this is not a relatively speaking high-tech pharmaceutical product to produce.
Okay.
It can definitely be done.
Mm-hmm.
FabuFarm has been doing it for pretty much for as long as they have been around.
Yeah.
So we do have a lot of examples of that sort. Of course, as we speak about the wheel,
mm-hmm.
we sort of have to maybe add urgency to that wheel.
Okay.
Because we saw this during the COVID-19 pandemic, and we continue to have similar issues with different classes of medicines.
Mm-hmm.
The main issue here is that this is not so much just an economic issue,
mm-hmm.
but this is a national security issue. I think that
yeah.
will must be framed correctly in the sense that this is a national security issue.
Mm.
So as we frame this industry, of course, there is a role for private sector to play a very significant role,
okay.
and a very huge role as well for the state to play, mainly for the state. They are responsible for the health of over 80% of the Namibian population. So
mm-hmm.
this is pertinent for the state
mm-hmm.
that they are able to have some security in that in that area.
Yeah.
And as mentioned with the FabuFarm example, we do not need to be big. We do not need to be overly high tech. We just have to be strategic.
Okay.
We have to be true to our needs. We have to be cognizance of, we really have to look inward before we are able to look around for solutions.
Interesting.
So we don't want to import solutions to a problem we didn't have. And we are in a fairly unique region of the world, that many of our problems are not easily replicated anywhere else. So it is difficult to really import solutions from those regions.
Mm.
So we do have the people, we do have the capacity. Where we might need expertise here and there, Namibia is a fairly attractive country for us to be able to attract those skills.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Dr. Singo, I know you have quite some students that are brilliant in your class, I'm sure.
Well, every one of them. Very brilliant.
Wonderful.
Kids, yes.
It's good to know.
Yes. So, just to add on that, really, manufacturing medicine is not difficult, Dafa.
Yeah.
It is not difficult.
From the way you're speaking, I'm thinking, you know what's coming to my mind?
Yeah.
It's almost like as if how we produce pasta.
I had
a guest speaking about pasta here, and it sounds relatively the same.
Yeah, because we know what we are talking about. We are coming from that space,
yeah.
So it's not difficult.
Yeah.
So I will tell you that I think, like I said, the will is really important. And let me rope in the government will here.
Okay.
Yeah, because you see, if you look at the market, looking at FabuFarm, they looked at their market and they produce for the market.
Mm.
The state is having to fork out millions and millions and millions. And of course, now they said, okay, there's no more, they're going to buy directly. The Ministry of Health will buy directly from outside suppliers.
Cutting out the middlemen.
Yeah, but that is still taking the Namibian dollar out of Namibia.
Ah.
Yeah, it is taking away the money.
Yes.
So the government should have the will to say, okay, let's look at our name list.
Mm-hmm.
As Mr. Kapirika has mentioned, what are the medicines we need for our population.
Mm.
And remember that 85% of our population makes use of public health facilities.
Yes.
They go to state hospitals. So already there's a huge market there. And one of the things that can sustain a pharmaceutical industry is a market. And that is where Namibia, we are challenged as a, as Her Excellency the President said the other time, that having more children is a matter of it's good for development.
Mm-hmm.
So the population we have can be a challenge,
okay,
because we are small. So the market is also small. So you have to be very smart as to how you approach manufacturing.
Mm.
But having said that, 85% of the people in this country make use of state facilities.
Yes.
So the state, instead of buying from outside, should really look at, let's set up manufacturing plants. It is not difficult. It's the same thing as what you have August 26 producing garments, or and then you have another factory there producing cement. It's the same thing. You just say, okay, this one will be producing pharmaceuticals.
Okay.
And I would also suggest, because if you look at the name list, there are different kinds of medicines.
Mm-hmm.
There are some medicines that are injectables. Mm-hmm. You go there and they inject you, which you are afraid of.
It's not true. I've overcome that fear.
And then you have things like tablets.
Yeah.
You have suspensions like calamine lotion that you put on your skin.
Yeah, yeah.
Something like paracetamol for children, which you drink.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have things like, I don't know, even clinical things. So the government could be strategic and say, okay, we're going to have this plant to make tablets.
Yeah.
This plant here is based in this other town to make syrups. This other one, this plant can make injectables,
like that.
And then you have several companies there, you see, that are producing pharmaceuticals like that. And at the end of the day, you see, if you look at, for example, China, that's what China did. China has these gigantic companies today that are producing manufacturing pharmaceuticals for China and for the rest of the world, which we are importing also here in this country.
Mm-hmm.
So the government has a role to play, and all that it requires is just to say, okay, we have a will. We should not be throwing the Namibian dollar out of this country. Let's keep it in. How do we keep it in? And that is one way.
Interesting. You speak about China, and there are some drugs, from what I've heard from China, that the World Health Organization refuses to recognize. Is that perhaps some of the worries and the fears to say, maybe if we start something, WHO might not really be forthcoming about it, or how?
Yeah, so that is, it's less an issue for us.
Okay.
I think we have some wonderful opportunities that have come up.
Okay.
We have, once we have medicines, and I think maybe just to frame it also,
yeah.
For most of the medicines that are vital for really having a properly functioning healthcare system,
mm-hmm.
are not high tech. They are not new,
mm.
so we know about them. We understand pretty much everything we can at this point mm-hmm. about this medicine. So
yeah.
there is no controversy about these medicines. So the issue comes into quality. Okay, fine. Maybe Dahafa's paracetamol is different from Malima's paracetamol.
Mm-hmm.
So those quality issues, that is where we need to have a strong regulatory environment to ensure that whatever we are producing is of good quality.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we have the NMRC is tasked with doing that. But more than that, there have been developments in harmonization of these functions, of mm-hmm. these regulatory functions.
Mm-hmm.
We have the what is called Zazibona. So a few SADC mm-hmm. countries came together, they mm-hmm. pulled together resources, they pulled together expertise, and then they are able to evaluate the quality of products being submitted or produced in these countries.
Mm-hmm.
So that is one of those things that we could look at as an opportunity to sort of alleviate any worries about issues with the public rejecting mm-hmm. it or anything. So there would be good systems for assurance of what is being produced.
Yeah. Yeah. If I may also add on that, we shouldn't worry about the quality
yeah.
Because I can already say something about our country.
Yeah.
Yeah, many times we like to complain, our country this, our country that, but actually we are doing very well.
Okay.
When it comes to safeguarding the lives of our people.
Mm.
Yeah, I can say that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, case in point is, of course, NMRC.
Mm-hmm.
NMRC just makes sure that whatever medicine goes out to the public is safe and it will work.
Mm-hmm.
And if the pharmaceutical industry is to take off, there should be no worry because NMRC will stand on their business.
Yeah,
we'll just
yeah.
make sure that the pharmaceutical plant is designed according to standards.
Yeah.
It is producing medicines according to standards. The records are there. So these are the things. And
nice.
Also,
we already have somebody in place
yeah,
to regulate.
And you know, also with regards to the market, mm-hmm. you see, we don't have to worry so much because, no, Namibia is a small country. It will not be viable. No,
mm-hmm.
you can produce for the rest of the world. And what happens is that if you have a client, for example, right now we are going to be clients of, they've talked about countries like Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to buy their medicines. What should happen is a country that has seen a potential source of medicines. Let's say Namibia wants to export to, let's say, Malawi.
Mm-hmm.
Malawi
mm-hmm.
will send their regulatory people to come and inspect and find out whether things are being manufactured according to the WHO guidelines for mm-hmm. good manufacturing practices.
Okay.
So as long as we are playing by the book, there should be no worry. And the government, I think, is doing a good job in making sure that regulations are in place and that they are being adhered to.
Mm.
Yeah. In the same line, I also want to just send out a message to the public there. There are some people who would like to prepare things and sell them on the market, their
that's
own products.
That's my next question to
yes,
you
please,
about herbalists,
Yes, I just want to throw in there, please, if you're going to advertise things for people to use, just make sure you're on the right side of the law. Because NMRC is charged to make sure that anything that is advertised and is claiming to treat any condition
mm-hmm.
should pass its tests. So please, let's adhere to the law. Let's make sure that we are in the good books of the government.
Mm.
Thank you.
I appreciate that. Because I do see, of course, people putting up on their Facebook and they say, or on their status. Nowadays, it's mostly on their status to say, this particular drug heals this, and this, and they put up pictures. And I'm like, but how do you know for sure that it does do that?
Yes.
But in terms of a herbal drug, a herbalist, or, mm-hmm. you know, our common idimbas and other stuff that we use, you know, in the north that our grandmothers would, but they really helped us. Where is Namibia standing in that aspect? Are we perhaps one day going to recognize it and say, okay, so we've noticed that for decades or for centuries, I don't know, this herbalist has been working? When are we maybe perhaps going to employ it and bring it even to into the States and say, perhaps you go and you can go and see that other herbalist. They are now recognized, and you can grab that. That might help you if other drugs, now the ones that are in the shelves, have their side effects and probably their precautions for this particular patient. They cannot be able to take it. Just where are we in that aspect?
Yeah. So they, as some of our politicians like to say,
yeah.
we must have Namibian solutions for Namibian problems.
Yeah. Thank you.
Correct. So, and we do, there is work being done in this respect. We are aware that there are traditional knowledge systems that are there that pertain to health. And the NMRC is currently working, of course, there are still tasks with that.
Yeah.
You know, it's still a medicine at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So they are working on producing guidelines and regulations for how to actually formalize this in
airports,
informal sort of medicinal system, our sort of African medical system. So there is work being done to formalize that, to sort of recognize, to say, okay, this is what we have. We can have some official ways of, for example, of saying when is it actually this particular route, how would you know, and all these sort of things. And then beyond that, of course, as I mentioned earlier, that you don't just start with a tablet already. You know, you have the different
aspects,
raw materials that you normally have to bring in.
Yeah.
And the most important one, of course, is that active ingredient that is actually treating your gout or your pain and so forth. And one way we know about these active ingredients is usually from traditional knowledge systems. So you would say, okay, this culture of people use this particular root and they use it to treat stomach aches. So then with the growing capacity in academia in this country, in this area, you know, there's already research being done, I'm aware, at our institutions, UNAM, NAST, where they are looking into these traditional therapies to see, actually, can we actually pinpoint what it is about this root that everyone who takes it says, yeah, my headache was gone after, you know, I chewed on this route.
Yeah.
So that is the sort of area we are moving in.
That's nice. When we talk about inclusivity, I understand when you really speak about that. I'm saying inclusivity, but I think I would just say, can we speed up in that? It's been long overdue. Yes, Dr. Singh.
Thank you for the opportunity. I just want to add on that.
Yeah.
One. When we talk about pharmaceutical manufacturing, we are mostly referring to Western medicine.
Actually.
Yes, Western medicine.
Mm-hmm.
But we have also traditional or African medicines. And there is nothing wrong with African medicines.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
It's not witchcraft?
No, it depends on the motives and all these things. Let me not go into that. But
because people tend to think a herbalist is a witch. So
it depends on the definitions of the law. So and I also want to say, you see, if you take Western medicine, for example, let's take our paracetamol since it started to do everything here.
Yeah.
Paracetamol only treats one thing, one or two things really.
Okay.
It is the pain and the fever. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that is where the idiom comes from, a pill for every ill. Because when you manufacture these things, this is for headache.
Yeah.
This is for gout.
Mm-hmm.
This is for fever. This tablet. And so you end up with a person, an elderly person taking several tablets to treat that one body that is having these problems.
Mm-hmm.
But I want you to think about it. If you look at some of these, plant-based medicines, okay, you will find that they say, okay, well, some things have to be proven, but the claim, and where there's smoke, there's fire, the claim is that it treats blood sugar, it treats headache, it treats diarrhea, it treats this and that.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why, if we're to be honest, you will see that the people in the West are actually leaving behind their kind of medicine, and they want to embrace traditional herbal medicines. There is a movement because you understand that this one tablet I'm having, it's only going to treat one part of my problem.
Yeah.
And the human body is more complex than that.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a kidney problem, usually there's a liver problem. If there's a headache, usually there's problems in the muscles. So we should look at what we have traditionally, be proud of our history and our heritage, and look to bring solutions that are in line with us. Now, Ndafa, I'll say something a bit deeper for your audience. You see, we all have DNA. And your DNA is very, very close to where you come from, you see. And where you come from, there are things that work with your body. And that's really important. I want to stop there. You should think about it. So when we talk about healing, healthcare, medicines, and so on, you must also think about the environment. Where do these people come from? And that is why in the very far past, people in this country, for example, different types of people, never had some certain conditions. But with the change of lifestyle, some conditions have come in, because these things that have come with the new lifestyle, the modern lifestyle, are completely foreign from our environment. But then, to solve your problems, you are looking for solutions that are far away, whereas your DNA is asking for things that are closer to you. Yes, I want to stop then, Ndafa.
Okay, before... I shouldn't pose a question to get you into trouble. Oh, wow. That's quite interesting. So for instance, for a lot of people, and I think this is something that we don't really dig into. Yeah. And as you said, I should think deeper about it. I am. And so now when we're talking about, for instance, Northern people's, DNA from the Northern part. And then there's a particular drug that then used to be used that was working well on them. But now we are looking to the West to treat something that can, I'm just breaking down what you just said, to treat something that can be better treated here at home. Okay. So now, Dr. Singhu, what do you suggest is the solution to this problem? Of course, he spoke about that NMRC is also in the process of doing that. But in the meantime, while we're waiting for them, what then do you suggest we do? Like, for instance, let me say I go to the hospital and the drugs that I'm being given have a lot of side effects, you know, and then apart from that, there are certain precautions because of that. I should be quite careful of doing it, or maybe some contraindications that I, for some reason, I can't take that drug. But then there's that other drug, but I'm a bit skeptical to say, I should go to that herbalist in my village. What then would you say? And I think I pose this question to you, not as the president of the, president of the board,
the chairperson
of the board, but to you as Dr. Singhu in your own capacity as a pharmacist and somebody who has understood the basics of it and seeing the potential and the solution to that.
Yeah. So, this is what I believe. I believe our mainstream healthcare should integrate traditional healthcare as well.
Can you repeat that?
Our mainstream healthcare should incorporate or accommodate traditional healthcare as well.
Okay.
Yeah. Of course, things should be regulated. But we see in this country, you see, we are always in respect of our traditional authorities. Why then should we only respect our traditional authorities in terms of culture and everything? Why should you leave your culture? Why should you leave what you believe is going to help you in your health outside of the door of the hospital? You know what that means? That means that if you truly strongly believe that there's a herbal medicine somewhere that can help you. And now you are coming into the doors of the hospital, and the hospital says, yeah, you leave your culture, you leave your beliefs, you leave your traditions at the door. We're going to treat you in another way. There will be a mismatch between your belief. Because you see, for you to get healed, you have to believe.
Thank you.
If you don't believe it, you will not get healed.
Exactly.
So faith is important.
Yes.
You have to believe. The medicines won't treat you if you don't believe that you'll be better. So it's important to think about these things. And please, I'm not trying to be radical here. Yes. I'm just offering some advice. And the thing is that, you see, DNA is really important. I teach a course to my students, on the importance of knowing the genomics of a person. And these things can be done very, very quickly. You can go, sit down, your blood is taken, and they will tell you, these are the genes you have. If we give you this medicine, we have to give you a smaller dose because...
I'm so sorry. Let's pause for a commercial break.
All right.
You've leveled up in life, and now it's time to level up your contact. MTC is changing the game with our new contract data plans. More data, more voice minutes, and more SMSs. Core of everything you need. Plans start from just $199 per month. And for a limited new customer's score, an extra 10 gigabytes of data valid for 90 days, absolutely free. Don't wait. Visit any MTC mobile home or call 1-2-000 to level up today. MTC, make the connection.
And we are back. Dr. Singu, you were telling us about the module you teach on DNA.
Yes. So the importance of knowing the DNA of the patient before you give the dose of a certain medicine.
The importance of knowing the DNA of a patient.
Yes, because you see, I'm going to mention some things which are, of course. Okay, so you have people that are Caucasian, like white.
Yeah.
People who are African, of African descent, yeah. Arabics, Chinese, and so on. It has been documented and proven, and this is known scientifically, that these different races have different genes.
True.
And those genes, you see, when you take in paracetamol into your body,
yeah.
It will not stay there forever because your liver will begin to break it down.
Yes.
But then some people have genes that code for enzymes, this enzyme that will break down the drug, which are maybe a lot of genes. Some have a few. And therefore, that will decide on how much paracetamol you need to give the patient. Yeah. So the DNA is really important.
Mm-hmm.
And it should be considered when a person comes to the hospital. Mm-hmm. And that's where we should be going. Yeah. And I really, I kind of put it forward mm-hmm. to our Ministry of Health that we should at least be, this is something that we are so behind on.
Mm-hmm.
Just making sure we know what kind of genes this patient has. Because I'll tell you now, Ndaafa, that, there are many medications that people are taking there, and simply because of the differences in genes, some patients are not getting better.
Yeah.
Yeah. As simple as that.
Okay.
Because they don't have the genes to sort of, sometimes some drugs we give have to be converted for them to work in the body, have to be changed.
Yeah.
So if you don't have that enzyme, enough of that enzyme, you are not going to benefit from that dose that everyone is getting. You have to have a dose that is tailored for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. Interesting. Now, coming back to you, Mr. Caprica, in terms of what he's saying, that aspect of DNA, this is something I know for sure it's not really explored, but then if it's something that is beneficial to the Namibian people or to the patients, why aren't we then exploring it? Why aren't we then allowing maybe research to be done on it? Perhaps just minimal research on it and it being regulated and put in place so that it can really benefit us.
Yeah, I think there are various factors that account for that. The main one, I think, has been the human resource that has been available.
Mm-hmm.
And further to that, for those that were available, whether they even had the time to be able to engage in let me call them higher level functions.
Okay.
Right. So this week we are celebrating Pharmacy Week.
Yeah.
Who are your professionals who are in charge of making sure that the medication you are taking is the right one for you and so forth. And it's a growing profession, and this is the profession generally that we want to be able to take charge of such areas of therapy,
mm-hmm.
to be able to review how a patient is doing. So that requires, of course, different types of pharmacists.
Mm-hmm.
So as we are talking about manufacturing now, so the skill set you need for manufacturing is somewhat differently special from someone in a ward who is actually looking at a patient to say, are you actually responding to the treatment we are giving you? Are we giving you the right dose? Are we, you know? So that is what needs to come in.
Mm-hmm.
So we need that specialization. And again, there's a lot of work being done to be able to recognize this special skill set that exists there amongst Namibians They are there. UNAM is training them. We have several being trained outside. They are there. We just need to utilize them.
Interesting.
We need to recognize them so that they are put to full use. So that is, and it all comes, we just spoke about the traditional knowledge systems that exist mm-hmm. out there.
Mm-hmm.
As he's saying, we need to formalize that. We do not need to look at them as two different things.
Mm-hmm.
I come to the hospital, I should be able to tell you I take this route and mm-hmm. then not be looked at like
yes.
I'm trying something.
Like as if I'm consulting witch doctors. There's a difference yeah. between herbalists and witch doctors, and I think
yeah.
we will also need to educate the public on that.
Yes, and I think the best way to really force through that sort of change shift in people's thinking
mm-hmm.
is to have formal recognition of these systems.
Agree.
And with that formal recognition comes a safety of people. Because that is the main issue for most people. Am I sure this guy who's giving me this route is not just, didn't just pick up something and then he's giving that to me?
Yeah.
So if I know that there's a body out there that actually has specifications to say, yes, we know how to tell the route of this particular plant that we use for treating this. This is what we need to do. This is the system that it has gone through to be validated.
Mm-hmm.
So if I know that, then I'm not going to be as fearful of this of this route anymore.
No, you're not.
So, so that all ties into that sort of industry of the pharmaceuticals that we have in the country. So we need to have those systems formalized,
mm-hmm.
and that formalization will ultimately allow these people who, as we mentioned, they are different. There are so many different things that have to come together to produce a medicine, from mm-hmm. engineers to finance to mm-hmm. everything.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the people that you are going to have there are farmers, right? Mm-hmm. You need to farm the starting materials for many of these medicines.
Yeah.
So for you to make the medicine, we might have to farm certain things, then extract some molecule from there, hand it over to the chemists, they do their kung fu, then they give us the paracetamol we need.
Mm.
So we need all this from the gelatin. When you make capsules, you have capsules that we take. That gelatin comes from bones of animals and skin of animals. We are a major animal farming country.
Yeah,
so there is a value chain there.
Absolutely.
So it's a very far reaching sort of industry
mm-hmm.
in the sense that it's very significant to national security,
mm-hmm.
but it's also very so interdependent on other industries.
Mm.
Yeah.
So interdependent on other industries.
Yeah.
So it's a whole, talk about Namibia's unemployment rate, which is currently standing at 44.4%, will be, or whether it has increased now, will be drastically reduced.
Definitely.
By just forming or placing or starting, be basic.
Dafa, if I may.
Yeah.
You see, looking at our traditional systems,
yeah,
we owe so much respect. We come from these traditional systems. And I am happy that our government recognizes our traditional authorities.
Okay.
Because you asked, how can we incorporate these things? And I think it's, as Mr. Kapirika has said, it is just a matter of formalizing things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So these traditional authorities can be consulted and say, okay, can you put together people who are renowned in your community in medicines?
Mm.
Can they sit together and agree as to this herb we know, we all agree it does this, it does this, it does this. And then from there, we all know the devil's claw.
I wouldn't yes. be justice right then. I never brought it
the
up.
The devil's claw is almost exclusively It naturally, almost exclusively grows in Southern Africa, majorly Namibia.
Yeah, yeah.
And this devil's claw, Europeans come, get it from our ground, get it from our people,
mm-hmm.
go and process it in Europe and send it back to us, sell it back to us. You see that pharmaceutical industry already there. So if we were to tap into our traditional knowledge
mm-hmm.
and say, what do you people here in Zambezi agree as herbal medicines, and then we take those ones, we have an industry, we process it, And we use it as medicine.
Yes.
Because, like I said.
And we export it to other countries.
You see, getting better health-wise is not about being taking the medicine or taking. No, it's about what you believe. So if a person strongly believes, then we have a very large rural population, which is strongly rooted in their traditional beliefs.
Yes.
If a person strongly believes that, oh, but I know that my people can help me, they can help me, and you take them to their people, or you give them things that their people have recommended, you see, the belief levels will go up, and it will help people to get better quickly.
And especially, sorry, Doc, while you are there, and especially when you are dealing with the elderly, there are certain medications that kind of like, at the end of the day, doesn't work so effectively as it would in a young person.
Yes.
Yeah. And then, so then this elderly person has known this particular indigenous drug, has been taking it for years and it's been working for them. Now, when you do actually recommend it, they are able to say, of course, I know. This is what my mom, and this 100-year-old who is speaking to say, this is what my mom used to give us. So then she's very, just like a lot of people, how they go to the hospital, and if they don't get an injection, they'll feel like they were not treated.
Yeah. And you know what? There's a school of thought which likes to say, okay, we have to look at the herbal medicines we have locally and then process them and make a tablet, like identify what is the active ingredient.
Okay.
But I feel that is a mistake.
Uh-huh.
Because you have to, you see, it's better to take the whole leaf, the whole root, maybe crush it and then take it as a tea. Because that plant has other things that you need for your health.
Yes.
But when you identify a molecule and take out the molecule, It's like taking someone and isolating them far away. They cannot survive by themselves. So it's really good to really think about these things. So yeah, I really feel like what we have traditionally, what we know traditionally, should be encouraged, and we should organize ourselves and really make you step into that traditional knowledge. Yeah.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much. Now, coming to you, Dr. Caprica, before we take a commercial break, since today, not just today, but this week is Pharmacy Week.
Yes.
Yeah, it's Pharmacy Week. While I have you in studio, I'm not going to let you go until you educate the people, layman persons, basic people who have never even had such a word as pharmacology or even come close to learning a module called pharmacology. In terms of when they take drugs, we still have people who overdose on certain drugs, might not have such major maybe adverse effects on them, but it can on some little ones, on the babies. Also side effects of some medications, and also precautions and contraindications and that kind of stuff. So teach us the basics of what a normal lay person ought to know. But before we do that, before we actually give you the platform, let's pause here and take a commercial break. But we'll be back with that.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Lipura nenge no wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maundutu to ingida ashike kapinu nwe udite okoye ekukulile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwa ya konongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune uto otukwetira o special angeza shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijabo ili nawa ninge pata fano na monika ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile konderewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu matatu o mafelane Eagle FM vipae.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura, and I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Goeie nuus, Imba het nou nog beter geword. Ons het splinternuwe funksies bygevoeg om jou ervaring vinniger, beter en kragtiger te maak as ooit tevore. As jy gereed om die volle potensiaal van Imba te geniet, kry alle eksklusiewe funksies vir slegs $36 per maand of spaar selfs meer met ons spesiale intekenplanne. 5% afslag vir 'n 3 maande intekening, 10% afslag vir 6 maande intekening en 25% afslag vir 'n 12 maande intekening. Kies die beste plan vir jou werk en geniet al die voordele wat Imba bied teen 'n onverbeterlike prys. Imba, waar die wêreld saamkom, laai dit af en teken vandag aan.
Mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Okay, and we are back. We're still joined in studio by Malima Kaprika, who is the pharmacy manager. That's what I have now. Okay. So, and the pharmacy board of Namibia. And then also Dr. Bonnie Singu, he is the chairperson of the pharmacy council, right?
Pharmacy board.
The same one.
Yes.
You see now. Cool. So we left off to say, educate us, educate the lay persons at home, educate, our uncles and our aunties and our grandmothers, to say, just what are the basics that I need to know about a drug? Say, for instance, a particular drug that I'm taking, a particular medication that I'm taking. And for many of us, we still go to the pharmacy and say, I'm taking that green and red capsule, but don't even know the name and also the adverse effects that come with that. Should they come, then I don't have to be so extremely worried and, yeah.
Yeah, so there's quite a few things for the normal person to know. Okay. Most of it, really, I think you'll be safe if you can keep in mind the adage that, or rather, it's a fact that all medicines are poisons. Okay, they become medicines when they are used in a controlled and responsible manner.
Actually, all medicines are poisons.
So when you are taking a medicine, you are taking a poison.
Mm.
Really? So what makes it a medicine is the dose that you take, how you take it. So the control mechanisms that goes with this medicine that you are taking
is
what defines it as a medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So that is important to remember. So that means then you should always know. You should always try to know what medication you are taking, especially for the elderly out there. If you are at home, always try to get someone to help you. Have maybe an old packet of whatever medication you are always taking.
Yeah.
Keep it with you when you come to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And when you are in doubt about anything, always approach a professional.
Mm.
Okay, speak to a nurse, speak to a doctor, speak to a pharmacist. Okay, and pharmacists are quite special in the respect that you generally are able to consult them. You can walk into a pharmacy, speak to a pharmacist, and there's no consultation fee for that.
Exactly.
One, right? So I want more Namibians to take that opportunity to actually chat with the pharmacist.
Mm-hmm.
Hear, you know, about the medication you are taking. And it's not just the Western medication, right? If you are going to collect your medication, tell them, I've started taking a tea to help me sleep better. But because we know that medicines, whether it's a tea or not, it's still a medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And the medicines have a way of interacting and interfering with
each other.
Right. So they might interfere in the sense that one is now not as effective anymore, or that interference can become destructive and mm-hmm. it can cause serious harm.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always important. Know the medication that you are taking. Understand as much as you can. And very important, always follow instructions.
Yeah.
So you have to follow instructions about how to take medication.
Mm-hmm.
So when medication is given, I have not yet seen it. I have not heard of it yet where medication was given for that whole room of 10 people there. This is their medicine. No.
Mm.
We give medication on a patient, on a person, per person basis.
Okay.
Right. So I could give paracetamol to one person, but because the condition is different, the liver for this individual works different than yours. So we have to be cautious about taking other people's medicines, essentially.
Okay. Yeah.
So always check with a professional before you take any medications. Try and avoid self-medicating, right? So always speak to a professional. There is always a professional that within reach, whether through a phone call, you can always speak to a pharmacist. You can, nurses are usually, especially in the rural areas where there are clinics, you can always speak to a nurse. They will assist you
mm-hmm.
with the various points. So it is always important to remember medicines are poisons.
Mm-hmm.
So every time you have to use a medicine, you have to be sure that you are using it responsibly and in a safe manner.
Yeah.
And that requires for you to adhere to certain instructions.
Mm-hmm. I specifically asked this question because one time when I took my grandfather to the hospital for his follow-up, it is then that the nurse found out that my grandfather was taking every time he comes to the hospital and he's behind with some medication and they give him aspirin. If they had given him aspirin at the last visit and he's not done with that. So now he's still going to take one drug of aspirin from this pack and still the other one. And you see, so he was actually doubling the dose.
Yeah.
And of course, that's why the medication wasn't working. And I think sometimes is this basic knowledge that we need to tell them, because it might look so insignificant, but to them, they just should follow it, you know.
Mm.
Okay, but Dr. Singh, I want you to talk to us about the pharmacokinetics of a drug.
Oh.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, any drug or just...
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that is a very technical question.
I know.
So basically, anything that has to do with... Okay, so... Drug.
Yeah.
When you use the word drug,
yeah.
we are talking about that one molecule that actually is in that tablet
mm.
that is meant to work. Now, when you take that one molecule and you put it together with other things like starch and things to mm. have that tablet,
yeah.
that is a medicine. Okay. So the medicine contains a drug. People use them interchangeably, but we are advised by the WHO to sort of distinguish. Because now when you say drug, people are thinking of cannabis and
yeah.
things. But when you say medicine,
marijuana.
Yeah, you're thinking about Ministry of Health, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, so anything that has to do with a drug,
mm-hmm.
okay, is pharmacology. Pharmacology is a study of how drugs work,
mm-hmm.
okay? And in pharmacology, you can have pharmacodynamics,
mm-hmm.
how the drug actually works, what changes it brings in your body,
mm-hmm.
and then pharmacokinetics, which you have asked is,
mm-hmm.
when you take that drug in your body, what happens to it?
Yeah.
What happens to it in the blood? What happens to it in the liver? What mm-hmm. happens to it in the kidneys? How long does it stay in the body before it is completely removed from the body? So that is pharmacokinetics.
Mm-hmm.
And this is important, if I may just bring in, because it's an open-ended question, now
yeah.
I have to think what is important to say. So I would just like to say it's important for the pharmacokinetics of a drug to be understood, and also the disease condition of the patient to be understood, so that you can tailor the pharmacokinetics to the disease. Very important is, for example, patients with a liver problem
mm.
or patients with a kidney problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because eventually, remember, this drug that you are taking through your mouth or being injected into your body has to be eliminated from the body, has to be removed from the body.
Mm-hmm.
And the two important organs in your body that eliminate drugs are the kidneys and the liver. If you have a liver problem, for example, it means that your liver is not going to eliminate that drug quickly. So the drug will remain longer in your body. So a patient like that, or even the kidneys, if your kidneys are failing, it means that the drug will stay longer in your body, which means that you should not be taking that dose as someone who doesn't have kidney problems or liver problems. You should be taking a smaller dose so that you don't get toxic problems from that drug. And this is where really as pharmacists we come in. The understanding of how drugs work. So unless you want me to add some more things, which I can, but I don't want to lose the audience.
You know, I'm so glad I asked you that question because you did justice to it.
Okay.
You had to just pull out, you know.
I just wanted to add something Pharmacy Week. Yes. So please, this is Pharmacy Week and this whole week was meant for the general public to be aware of the services that can be rendered to them through pharmacists by the healthcare system. Okay. We are not saying pharmacists are the only people who can take care of your health or they're most important. No, we are a team of doctors, nurses, dentists, radiographers, everyone. Pharmacists just happen to be part of the team because we have a specialized skill, which is just looking at the medicines. So I just wanted to say that we are there for you as pharmacists. If you don't understand your medication, you have a question or something, ask your pharmacist. If you don't understand how to take your medicine, ask your pharmacist. And I am just happy to say that our government has done justice to making sure that pharmaceutical services are provided in this country to the extent of establishing the UNAM School of Pharmacy where I teach. So the real reason for that is that the government wants to make sure that when it comes to pharmaceutical services, we have good services being offered to the public. And the numbers are important. Human resource, remember. So the School of Pharmacy has been training pharmacists. We produce about 40 pharmacists every year. And currently in the country, we have about 800 pharmacists. And half of those how many years have we been graduating now? About 10 years that we've been graduating. In the 10 years that the School of Pharmacy at UNAM has been graduating, we have provided half the number of all the pharmacists in the country. And we project that by 2040, 2050, we shall have sufficient, more than enough numbers in the country just coming from this one school of pharmacy. So I just wanted to let the country know that their health is in safe hands with pharmacists. And that's why you see all this noise we are trying to make, because we want to let you know that have a peaceful mind about things. Feel taken care of. Pharmacists are there for you to make sure that you live a quality, good, long life. And I also want to say something that is really important to me as the chairperson of the Pharmacy Board of Namibia. Pharmacists rarely have any disciplinary cases going on. Pharmacists are well behaved, very professional, always have a good conduct. And should there be any minor things, that is what we are there for as the board, to make sure that our professionals are treating the public with respect and professionally. So I would like to assure the public out there that as pharmacists, we are thinking about you first and we are here for you. Please consult with us. And you should hang some of our pictures as pharmacists in your house there, because we are really part of your family. Thank you very much.
Yeah, sure. Now to you, over to you, Mr. Malima Caprica. In terms of being Pharmacy Week, thank you, you brought that up also. What is your message to pharmacists out there?
Yeah, so to the pharmacists that we have in the country, I think first of all it's just to say thank you and acknowledge that they are doing a very good job given the circumstances that most have to do this work. Special thanks to the pharmacists in public service who are in the rural areas, who are in remote areas, working to really take care of our people, doing what they can with the challenges that we have with the medicine supply and things of that nature. They are really trying their best to ensure that the public is taken care of. Of course, our public sector is our most important for the health of the nation. So, of course, private is not sleeping at the wheel. They are doing wonderful work. They are doing wonderful work. And the collaboration of pharmacists are doing a lot of wonderful work that perhaps may not be too sexy, if I put it that way, in terms of the in the public eye, right? From protecting really this industry, as I said, the ensuring that medicines and the health of the nation is a national security issue.
Yeah, yeah.
Not unlike having the Namibian defense forces. Mm. This is really on par with that sort of imperative.
Nice.
So to guard that industry, to guard it from any sort of foreign hostile takeover, if I should phrase it that way.
Mm-hmm.
There is work being done there to ensure that economically the industry is sustainable,
mm-hmm.
and it remains sort of a sovereign a child of Namibia,
mm.
and not a something outsourced from anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So the pharmacists are doing a lot of work. We see the work that is being done, and we are very grateful. Mm. We are very grateful to the work that they are able to do, for the most part in really personal capacity,
yeah.
Because there's no other way. They have to sacrifice their time that they could otherwise have been doing something else, which is also perhaps economically viable for them.
Mm-hmm.
But they do this work.
Mm-hmm.
So we are very thankful to the professional societies that for the pharmacists that are there,
mm-hmm.
who are there to ensure that, first of all, their own members, the pharmacists, are adhering to their own promise to the public,
mm.
to take care of them, to look out for the public's interest first, and then the sort of extra sort of nuanced work that they have to do in the background,
mm.
with their own resources, really.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
we are very appreciative of that. So
nice.
I think a big thank you today when you find the pharmacist, hug them.
Yes.
They are doing well.
and give them money.
Yes. And take a photo and put it in your house.
Okay. Dr. Malima, not Dr. Malima. No. Okay. Dr. Singu, you spoke about, pharmacists have the least misconduct. I want you to tell us perhaps why is that, and also your message to the pharmacist out there.
Yeah, thank you. One of the most important reasons why pharmacists are very professional is because every well-to-do pharmacy school where these pharmacists were trained, especially here at UNAM, we make sure that we teach the law. We teach professional conduct,
mm.
and we teach ethics.
Medical law and ethics.
Yes.
Mm.
So we have a dedicated module where we take the regulations and the laws that govern pharmacy practice, and we teach them to our students before we let them go. Yeah. And some universities, before they take you into a pharmacy school, they want to have an interview with you, find out what kind of person you are. So people are vetoed. It's challenging. I see the way we are going now. Apparently, people will not need to be sort of checked before they get a job and things like that. This is not advisable. So pharmacists are professional,
mm-hmm.
and there are all kinds of laws mm-hmm. that make sure that person who is going to practice pharmacy
mm-hmm.
is of a certain character, personality, really,
yeah.
behavior, and ethics, because the profession should not be put into disrepute. And I think our members out there, all the pharmacists out there, have taken the profession to heart.
Mm.
There's hardly a person whom you find who is a pharmacist and they are not excited about what they do for the public.
Yeah.
So I think that is one. One is really that people are taught on what the law requires from them, ethically, professionally. And also, it's just the people. The people are good. When I used to work in a community pharmacy, people would just come to the pharmacy just to offload their problems and just talk, you know?
Yeah.
And I know there are some people in the audience who do the same. They just want to go to their favorite pharmacist and just talk, you know? So that is the kind of people we have in the profession.
Mm.
Yeah.
Interestingly, let me add on that. Just the other day, a doctor was telling me about how she was feeling so tired when she went to work. And then so she prescribed medication for the patient and sent them to the pharmacy. And then the pharmacist sent the patient back to the doctor to say, please go and tell the doctor that she didn't write the dosages, so she didn't, you know. So that's how really important a pharmacist is. And not only that, they don't just, I think I've come to appreciate pharmacists because they don't just take what the doctor has given them and just prescribe. They kind of also just double check to see, is this the right drug to give? Is it in this right dose that it should be given? And that relationship should be encouraged, of course, in our hospitals.
Yeah. And that's what we are seeing as we are there training the students, not only the pharmacists, but also the medical doctors and the dentists. And we see how the graduates that are coming out actually appreciate working together.
Mm.
Yeah. This is new and it's very exciting. Mm-hmm. The younger generations of pharmacists and doctors going out there appreciate one another.
Mm.
And this is good for the public.
Wonderful.
You don't want to have your doctor being in loggerheads with the pharmacist. Now they don't talk properly.
Mm-mm.
No, they should be able to understand one another and appreciate what it is that they bring to the table separately.
Okay.
This is important.
Wonderful. It's been such a wonderful pleasure to have you in studio with me this afternoon to debunk this topic. And I think I've learned my fair share of it. I've concluded that honestly making medicine, an offense to the pharmacist considering it's pharmacy week, so it's almost like making cement. It's like making pasta. It's just chemicals behind that the will should be there for us to do it. And I think the capital, the human resource capital is there. Perhaps maybe the finance will be there as well. It's been really a pleasure, Dr. Bonnie Singo, to have you in studio with me.
Thank you.
Okay. And it's been a pleasure to have you, now I say it with all confidence, Dr. Malimaka.
Yes. Yes, Leo, thank you. Yeah, I receive.
No more mistakes.
Yeah.
It's intentional now. Okay. With that being said, let's pause here now and take a trip to the marketplace. I still have time with you, so stick with us.
While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some times from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the Radio News Analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have the capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6%, is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. And now for news beyond the borders of Namibia. While we're talking about the pharmaceutical industries right here in Namibia, meanwhile, traditional cheese making is flourishing in Nigeria.
In a small kitchen in Ilori, the capital of Nigeria's Kwara State, milk is turning one family's dreams of a better life into reality. For over 3 decades, Iyabo Ahmed has been transforming cow's milk into creamy curds, similar to what her mother and grandmother did.
I've been selling this for over 35 years because I was born into it. I don't know how to do any other business apart from this. I did this as a young person, even before I got married.
The journey begins in Nigeria's farmlands, where cows provide the raw ingredient for this dairy devotion. Back in the kitchen, Ahmed pours fresh milk into a pot, the start of a special cheese-producing journey, steeped in tradition and passed down generations.
We pour the milk into the pot, then we will squeeze the sorghum apple stem into it, and after 30 minutes, we then scoop the curd out. That is what I'm doing now.
The result? A soft milky cheese, loved by locals and travelers alike.
Everyone eats it. People travel with this cheese. People who want to travel with it are depositing money already. Travelers are my major buyers. They send money and they send cheese.
For many Nigerians, cheese isn't just a treat. It is tradition on a plate.
It's very important for us, especially where we see it with bread, or we eat it with pap, other thing.
But while Lawrence kitchens keep the old flame burning, urban chefs are giving say cheese a global twist. In Uyo, Chef Mfuniso Omote grates mozzarella onto pizza dough, a modern recipe for Nigeria's growing appetite.
The one I prefer to really use, and the one that is rampantly used in my own locality, is the mozzarella cheese. Of course, that is because of the preparation of pizza. We have a lot of pizza houses and huts around here.
Still, in bustling markets like Ilorin's, traditional cheese, or wara in the local dialect, continues to sell like hotcakes or hot curds.
The electric...
I've been in this business for the past 20 to 25 years of age now. We sell up to 200 or 500,000.
And for traders like Tawakali to Ibrahim, cheese isn't just a delicacy, it is dinner.
We've been cooking soup with cheese for a long time. Meat and cheese cost about the same, but cheese has more benefits. That's why we choose to cook with cheese.
In a nation blending tradition and innovation, Nigeria's cheese scene is proving one thing. You don't need to reinvent the wheel. Just curd it better. Ian Kinyo, CGTN.
Meanwhile, Spiro secures $100 million in Africa's largest electric mobility funding round.
The electric motorcycle assembler Spiro has raised $100 million in capital in what is being described as the biggest funding round in electric mobility in any African country. The African Export and Import Bank, or the Afreximbank as it's more commonly known, that's provided $75 million of that capital, and the remainder is coming from a variety of private equity funds whom Spiro Management so far has declined to identify. Spiro says it will deploy that capital in expanding both motorcycle assembly as well as its network of battery swap stations. Specifically, the firm aims to sell at least 300,000 battery-powered electric vehicles in 2026, while having 10,000 battery swap stations in at least six countries. For comparison, if Spiro does manage to actually hit that motorcycle sales target next year, that will be twice the sales volumes of Harley-Davidson in 2024.
The way to think of it is today, you know, first, the EV bikes, Spiro bikes that we sell are cheaper than the normal ICE bikes. So our bikes are sub-$1,000 and sub-markets, they're $650. So they're significantly cheaper than the ICE bikes. Secondly, the cost of operation for the riders is about 30 to 40% depending on the market cheaper than the ICE bikes. So from an overall cost ownership perspective, it's about 30 to 40% cheaper than the normal fuel bikes. And therefore, a lot of adoption happening. But I think for the adoption to happen, what is important is that you have the energy infra. And that is what we are rolling out. So that the rider does not need to worry about where he'll be able to get his battery swapping done. So as a point in case, Rwanda has over 700 swap stations. So every 5 kilometers, you'll find a Spiro swap station in Rwanda. And similar infrastructure being rolled out in Kenya and in Uganda. So that takes away the range anxiety or the anxiety where you will swap it. The third part that you talked about is how do you ensure that we have the energy. So, you know, depending on the market, in some markets where energy is not an issue, we take it from the grid. Where there's an issue, then we have our own solar power that powers the swapping infrastructure so that energy is not an issue. And lastly, because we are now able to have built a tech platform on top of our EV bikes, because each and every EV bike and the battery is IoT tracked, we are able to bring down, or the banks are able to bring down, the cost of lending significantly. So normally an ICE bike, the banks will lend anything between 40 to 70% interest rate to the riders. Using our platform, bankers and the lenders are able to lend only at 14, 15% interest rate. So that's also bringing down the cost of ownership significantly.
And with that, we have now come to the conclusion after this episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Do stay tuned for the Voters Preparation Program brought to you by Bishop Lucas Katende. And of course, from 16:30, the Home Run Show with Dwight and Helmut kicks off and keeps you company on your way back home. Also, from 1800 hours is the Business Economics segment with David Shombe. Now, should you be interested in listening to this wonderful conversation on the Reading News Analysis, you can head over to our podcast section. That is, if you have downloaded the Eagle FM app, or head over to Eagle FM website and you can enjoy it again. With that being said, stay tuned for all our other platforms, whether it's Facebook, Eagle FM Namibia on Facebook, LinkedIn, WhatsApp. Do follow our WhatsApp channel and subscribe to receive our tri-weekly dose of economic and social news right in our The Villager newspaper. It's out tomorrow, Friday, so make sure you do grab your copy. From Indafa, happy juju. It's goodbye. Morwe data. Paife, ohandimo kuyadi. Nondaka, ne data, no shoyo o tungarakava hupi. O netwe kaimwe, o kufutarumwe, o kuinyengarumwe, o kujapandali, fio papa ndauka. O nda pumga o netwe kaoyo, hai dira dira, ya fange. O mafikwa amwe, o handi streaming, o mafikwa amwe, o handi popi, o mafikwa amwe, o handi ningaishe, po shikanto shimwe. Pamwina parateza, o inda holora, ameha ishipangere, osho pa umwene. Dira dira oma kwa tafanoni data mom karo wili mwana parika okutuma kwa utumaraka okustreaminga na okudenga pamwe na Parates konga Parates Namibia. Oh.